Hello, hello. Hey, yo, what's up? What's good? Bonjour. Welcome to the Any Given Runway Show. I'm your host, Randall Carlton Brown. Any Given Runway celebrates the exploration of new cultures by highlighting some of the most artistic, athletic, tenacious, basically unique and interesting people in the world. Everyone has a story. Each person a scholar. Welcome to Season 5. Over the past 4 seasons, the show has embarked on a whirlwind adventure, traversing the globe, and now we are gearing up for another exciting journey with over 600 episodes featuring extraordinary guests from all walks of life in over 70 countries. We've celebrated the unique, we've delved into the unknown, and our goal is to embrace the extraordinary. On Any Given Runway, there is no normal guest. The only consistent characteristic is being atypical. Authors have shared the pages of their captivating tales. We've had Olympians revealing the secrets to their perseverance, and performers from across the gamut have invited us into their world of art and expression. We have a fantastic episode for you today with a wonderfully artistic guest. Writer and musician Don Silver joins the show. Don Silver is a musician, ex-record producer, and acclaimed author whose debut novel, Backwards Facing Man, was hailed as memorably offbeat by the New York Times and illuminating and entertaining by the Pittsburgh Tribune. Don is back with a new novel in his signature edge-of-your-seat literary style. Scorched is a dark coming-of-age novel with killer needle drops throughout and an ode to Don's storied career in the music industry. In Scorched, we meet 14-year-old Jonas, who, after his father's death, tries to support his family and mother by selling weed and tranquilizers at parties until he gets busted and sent to a boarding school for fatherless boys. Now, to survive Lafayette Academy, Jonas and his 4 roommates form a tight bond. The boys vow to have each other's backs for life. But that promise is broken the weekend before graduation when they're drawn into a violent encounter that results in a man's death. 20 years later, when one of his roommates shows up unannounced, Jonas is forced to confront his complicated past once and for all. I really enjoyed Scorched, and for me what stood out was Don was very deliberate in building a slow tension, kind of like boiling water over the course of the time. As that pressure is rising, you're wondering what's coming around the next corner and how the characters are going to rectify the situation. On today's episode, Don discusses his newest novel, Scorched, how he develops his characters' personalities, and lastly, we discuss the overlap of writing and music, and how the two creative endeavors produce a bit of artistic synergy. So thankful that we get to chat from someone from Philadelphia, one of my favorite cities. You're going to love him. So let's go ahead and bring on musician and author of the new novel, Scorched, Don Silver. And let's learn.
What inspired you to write Scorched?
It's very difficult to find the moment of inception for any creative endeavor, or certainly a novel. But there was, in my 40s, I think, I met a man who had a really bad argument with his dad when he was 13. And then his dad went off to work and had a heart attack and passed away. And this guy, who became a friend, carried that experience in the form of tremendous regret and responsibility all through his life. And it struck me as one of the prime experiences of his life. So I wanted to imagine what it would be like for someone to have a very rocky relationship with a dad, for a male to lose their father after having no relationship at all. This wasn't the experience of my friend, but so that was the seed of the idea. And I think from there, it all became fiction, and I tried to see the world through this young man's eyes.
You have that crack in the family dynamics, but you also have another incident that sticks with him. So there were multiple occasions of the characters having to face this long thing that's been lingering underneath. Can we outrun our past, or how do you use that with your characters, knowing that they can't outrun their past?
Yeah, that's a cool way of looking at things. Like we all spend many of our hours reviewing the past. What could I have said? What could I have done? Or wasn't I great in this or that moment? And we've also all had the experience of looking back at an event that occurred to us many years ago that looked like one way when we were in it, and that looks completely different now. And many of us view hardship that way. Like, well, if it hadn't been for that hardship, I wouldn't have gotten to where I got. I think we can change the past by virtue of how we reflect on it. But I don't think we can, we have to run, we can outrun it by running towards it and not away from it, if that makes sense.
It does.
You know?
It does.
Like through reconsideration and looking at things through a different lens, I think we can recategorize the events that happened to us radically.
The book Scorched, one thing that stood out for me, it's a very slow and deliberate pace that along the way is really developing and building the tension. Now, my first question was, how do you stay disciplined to not at times want to maybe speed up or change the pace, change the tempo?
Okay. It is tempting to pick up when I know what's going to happen, but yeah. I start with character. So I have a character who's an adolescent, and I remember adolescence very vividly in one particular way, that time would seem to go so slow. I mean, from the point of view of sitting in a classroom, you know, it could take like an hour to be for 5 minutes to pass if you're waiting to be dismissed. And I think it's because so much developmentally is happening. So it seemed okay to be really crawling along and giving a depiction of what this individual's adolescence was like. And then in the middle of the book, we pick up at middle age when time seems to fly by a little quicker. And also the character and his mates get into some trouble. So the danger element allowed me to quicken the pace, which was rewarding. It had been tempting to, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I thought as I was reading, I thought of like bringing water to a boil in a pot. I would just slowly, that 1 degree difference. And all of a sudden, and I kept waiting, like, what's coming around the corner? Are we going to have that explosion around the corner? It's a coming of age novel. You got to set the scene for the vibes. So how do you go about setting the scene of the 70s?
Well, it helps having lived through the 70s, yeah. Candidly. So I was referring to things that were in the zeitgeist, and I was able to pick from them the certain details that I thought would resonate with my character. So, for example, in the 70s, Muhammad Ali was a big entertainment figure and, you know, great athlete. And it occurred to me that Muhammad Ali would appeal to my character because of his bombastic nature and his creativity. So that particular detail was easy to draw in. I thought, well, my character would like this guy, or another character might be influenced by architecture or what Halloween looked like in the 70s.
What did you enjoy most about reliving those memories and those thoughts from that time? Was there something that as you were doing research, you're like, you know what? I forgot about that.
Yeah, though, let me take both the two parts. One, I enjoyed the music, reliving some of the musical moments.
Of course.
And also I enjoyed looking at high school through somebody else's eyes, through an older man's eyes. High school was such a odd and very peculiar period in life for me and many other people. So I enjoyed seeing it as an adult. And what surprised me, what was nice to recall, just how simple the world was. It seemed so complex at the time, but how simple it was compared to what it is now.
When I read, I have a pen in my handy, trusty pen next to me at all times, always underlining, scarring things. And one phrase that I underlined, page 84, was a very simple phrase, but it means so much and has a lot of deep meaning to it. You do what you have to do to survive. Why was that such a significant motivation for your characters?
You know, we associate adolescence and childhood with times of joy and ease. I mean, there's strife, of course, socially especially, but we have characters in Scorched who are under a great deal of pressure and are doing things really they don't want to do, but have to do. So the main character and his mates find themselves in an orphanage-like school, and there are a lot of compromises to their autonomy and integrity. So whereas that's an adult, it seemed like an adult observation. We do what we do to survive. It seems significant to me that these 14, 15-year-old boys were having to embrace that as an ethos at that time in their lives.
That was definitely a phrase that stuck with me for a long time. Philadelphia, now, it's one of my favorite cities. We do have the kinship of being Eagles fans, but I feel that it's an underused location for books. We always see New York City, Los Angeles. So I was very thankful that this book took place in the city of brotherly love. How do you go about capturing the essence of Philly?
Well, having lived there for a couple decades, yeah, and having grown up outside it, I had a sense of it, a pretty strong sense of it. But in my adult life, and as a writer, I wander around. And the things that, you know, wouldn't necessarily occur to me if I was doing a 9-to-5 commute and going from one place to another, I'd have time to explore. And I did a good deal of that in my 40s. Just walking around Philly, it's a really rich and diverse city. There's an awful lot of, you know, there's an underbelly. If you're an Eagles fan, you know that there's a fierceness to the character of Philadelphians, but there's also an ease or tolerance, I find, because there's so many people of different backgrounds mashed together and somehow have found a way, by and large, to live in some kind of harmony, maybe not brotherly love, but something akin to that.
And what I appreciated also was that you didn't take the low-hanging fruit of just mentioning cheesesteaks and Geno's and everything. You took us to different locations. Those are the ones that you see people who know only a superficial knowledge of Philadelphia will mention. You went deeper. You took us to specific locations. A question I love to ask anybody who works in a creative field, but where do you find creativity?
I guess I'm really lucky to be just so curious. And I've never really been wanting for subjects to obsess about, to be candid. So I read a lot, like you. I'm an avid reader, and there's so much that's fascinating about this world and this life that any of them can and do lead me into rabbit holes of research, and I get to imagine myself living a different life just by virtue of an interest. So I don't know. And I'm also a writer who sits at a desk every day, you know, so I don't wait for inspiration. I go to work at 9 o'clock and I finish at 5 generally. And if I'm sitting there that long, something will come up that will lead me to something that's fascinating. Not always usable, but
yeah. So this is something that I think about often. If something is not usable, do you still go ahead and write it? I mean, maybe knowing that, hey, this might not work in Scorched, but perhaps it could work in a different project later on, or maybe I need to write it just to help myself with the overall world building.
I don't know if it's that deliberate, Randall. I do follow lines that end up not being usable. And I save them on my computer, but I've never used one for anything other than, I haven't used it at all. So I don't know that it's practical for me to save these and exhume them and reuse them. I love to write, so I never feel like I wasted my time. But I have wasted many words, you know. The word cemetery around here is full.
The word cemetery. I like that phrase. You mentioned your relentless curiosity also stepping into the mind of other people. Well, in your book, one of the characters is very manipulative. So how did you get into that mindset? Because I imagine that it was intriguing, maybe fun at times, but it potentially could be depressing. And you might be distraught after going into that mindset. So how do you take yourself into the mind of maybe an unsavory character like someone who's manipulative?
I guess the allowance that within me and within everyone are all the facets of the human experience. I would not hold myself out as someone who could not imagine being manipulative and who was not at times in my life manipulative, not to the extent that the characters in my fiction are, but I try not to take a moral stance or judge anything, not just in fiction, but I try really hard not in life not to assign a judgment to something. I think you know, by starting Scorched with adolescence, I've tried to depict how early childhood and adolescence can shape a person and make them into something in adulthood that might otherwise look pretty horrific in a way.
That's interesting. And I like that you mentioned we've got elements of both. What if it was a characteristic that you didn't know so much about? How do you research or develop a backstory of a character that you don't know much about, whether it be manipulative or some other trait?
Well, there is research, as you say. I can read about it. So I did a fair amount of reading into a particular kind of mental illness that accompanies a character through his life. And then I, you know, just kind of make shit up, actually, to be candid. I mean, it may or may not ring true to a reader, but if I allow myself to just let go and pretend I'm that person, something plausible will come up. Like, for example, the lead character in my book, Jonas, has a sensation, a kind of a sound that he imagines he hears. And I don't really know what that is. I don't have that myself. But I felt that such a thing could exist and that I could portray it if I took it very seriously.
I mentioned about how I underline things while I'm reading. If I was to underline dialogue from this episode, it would be make stuff up. That would be the one that I underline, because I think it's just a very honest answer. It's very true, very applicable. Okay, now maybe my favorite time, the little transition. Let's talk about music. Okay. And you know, you're nodding, you're lighting up already as we're talking about it. How does music play a role in your creativity?
Well, before there were words and stories in my life, there was music. That is a real a passion for me. And the ability to hear it and make it up and play it is something near and dear to me. So throughout my childhood and teenage years, I was playing music and listening to music. And then when you know, I was fortunate to come of age in a time when music was great and it was really available and in the cultural zeitgeist. So it had very strong impact on me. And I've just carried that through my life. I still am a great big music fan, and I've branched off into little jazz saxophone now, which is something I'm trying to learn. But it's kind of writing adjacent. It's so interesting to me that music, like words, will linger on a page, but musical notes that are not recorded are just in the air for a moment, and yet they can produce the same kind of emotional punch that words can. So I don't know, the very, very close kinship for me.
Yeah. And I pretty much assume that when you were trying to develop that aura of the 1970s, that you're probably listening to musical acts from 1970s. But in fairness, I think you listen to those guys no matter what, even if you weren't writing a book. What about when it comes to a particular mood? Are there artists that you go to if you're writing a darker point? And are there artists or songs that you go to if you're writing more of a happier? Do you use music to help set the tone in your own mind?
Not really, not so much. Okay. I don't listen to music while I'm writing, because the rhythm or the cadence of my sentences, I can't really. I also don't read novels while I'm writing, because I'll assume the voice of the author, particularly if they're good. And you know, if you tell me about a character, I can imagine what kind of music they would like. So in Scorched, my characters have musical tastes that are different from mine personally. So I might have gone and listened to some things I didn't listen to when I was that age, just to get an insight into my character. I think I did that for Scorched a few times.
Yeah, I was writing down some of the musical acts. Of course, the OJs were on there, and of course, the Beatles. And I was curious, what's Doogie's favorite Beatles song?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good one. And let me ponder that for a second.
Okay.
Well, it might be Helter Skelter.
Which paints a pretty good picture of his personality. I know that you're an avid Beatles fan as well. If I could pick you up and put you in the recording sessions, just sit in the corner of recording sessions for any of the albums that the Beatles created, Which album are we sitting in on?
It might be Revolver.
Revolver, okay.
Yeah, because I'm so in awe of the combination of craft and inspiration that these four guys did. So that to me is like the height of those two elements coming together.
Interesting.
And we're lucky to have Get Back. I don't know if you've seen that long.
I have. It's perfect.
Yeah, so I feel like I already got to sit in on that.
That was literally this morning when I was thinking of this question to you. I said, if I was to answer that question, I wouldn't pick the Let It Be because I've already seen that in the Get Back documentary. Yeah. So I'd have to pick a different album. What's interesting I found with the writers that I speak with is when they are promoting a new book, often this book has been finished a while ago and they're on to the next. So for you, when you completed Scorched, was it, hey, I'm taking a break from writing, or you just wanted to keep the momentum going? You already started working on the next.
As soon as I finished Scorched, I picked up this old saxophone that my dad had had left, and I started to noodle around with it, and I just fell in love with it. So I'm on a sabbatical from writing, and I'm learning music theory and all that kind of stuff, and it's a delightful way to experience art and not be mired in the details and associations of words.
Okay, so as you're learning musical theory, what were some of the instances where all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, that's just like writing?
It's the discipline the blocking and tackling, the day-to-day. You got to know grammar to be able to render a thought in a creative written way. And while I've always been a seat-of-the-pants musician, this time I'm learning it. Like, oh, this is what a major chord, a minor chord, an augmented or diminished chord is. And that's how I can develop my skills, similar to how eventually I got my writing act together and did that.
Very cool. Well, on this sabbatical, do you already feel there are certain things that you're going to be able to take from this, develop a musical theory? Are there certain skills that you now have developed that you're eager to translate back into writing?
I think the idea of improvising in music and in writing are very much akin. When we achieve a flow state in writing, it could be in running, it could be in swimming, it could be in lovemaking, it could be in music. And I really love that element of life. I mean, to hit the flow state in writing there's nothing like it. It's so much fun.
Cool. Well, I think that's exciting that you have another form of artistic expression, because I know they definitely will overlap. And so I'm curious on your next project to see how the next project is influenced by the music. What was the first major concert you attended?
I saw Hot Tuna and a group called Brewer and Shipley, a duo called Brewer and Shipley, who they were a one-hit wonder at the time, but they had several albums. And I think I went when I was 14, and it was so loud, I imagined that my ears were bleeding. So I don't remember anything else except the loudness of it and the mushroom cloud of weed smoke over what was then the Academy of Music in Philadelphia.
Well, did you catch any musical acts at the Spectrum?
Oh yeah, many, many. I saw the Dead there many times. That's where they
probably
would
probably another mushroom cloud going on at that one as well.
Yeah, and the Spectrum wasn't a great they didn't have great audio, but great sound quality, but it was a fine place to see many acts if you couldn't see them outside in the spring or summer.
Yeah. And the concert performance that you still think back to the most where you think back of, gosh, that was just an amazing show and I'm so thankful I was there, was what?
I think I saw Peter Gabriel. It might have been on a Live Aid, one of these giant benefits. There was something about Peter Gabriel that was just otherworldly. He was so amazing, and his band were so good. There have been many, many concerts, but that's the one that pops into my mind at the thought. Yeah, hey, I really appreciate your taking the time to do this and ask me these questions. And I think what you're doing is great. I'm gonna be listening to some other episodes.
I was excited to chat with you along the way. As I was reading the book, I'm like, I'm so glad I get to talk to Don, especially because I had some book questions, but also musical questions that I was excited to ask you.
Yeah, great to talk with you, Randall. Okay.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Don. I know we'll talk again, but thank you for a day.
Okay. You take care.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you, thank you, thank you for listening. Much appreciation to Don. Now, on the episode, Don remarked that he would love to sit on the Revolver sessions, but he did send me a follow-up email and say that he meant to say Rubber Soul, particularly because of the solo on Taxman. When it comes to Beatles albums, there is no wrong answer. I'm sure that the next time we talk to Don, he might give us a different album. Scoop up his newest novel, Scorched. And for more information, you can visit donsilver.net. Everyone has a story. Each person a scholar. Thank you for listening. Fill up that passport. I'll see you on the road. A bientôt.